I'm calling the meeting to order at 3 minutes after nine. I stand to be corrected, 2 minutes after nine, March 9th, 2010. At this time, please turn off all your electronic devices. And are you ready to roll? We have Molly George over there from Senate Records, as well as Thacker Browner from the handling our LIO. Are you good to go? And then my staff, State Affairs Senate staff person, committee person, is now Sharon Benson. Not that we're doing away with Sarah, but we're cross-training here. So thank you very much, and let the record reflect that we have Senator French has joined us, as well as Senator Meyer, and I am Senator Menard. Confirmations are on our agenda today. Our agenda, as you probably have already seen, is state. We have confirmation hearings for State Commission for Human Rights, Lester Lunchford. Then we have Lieutenant Governor's successor, Lawrence Hardig, and then Commissioner, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, General Thomas Katkus. And then we just had Senator Kukesh here joining us at the table. So welcome and good morning. So we have on off net calling in from Whittier, Lester Lunchford. So if you are willing to come forward, sir, would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, first I want to thank you, Senator Menard, and Senator Myers, and Senator Kukesh, and everyone else there. Senator French, thank you for attending this meeting. And thank you for allowing me to telephone in from Whittier. Unfortunately, I do have remnants of a cold, so please be patient with me. But this is a very important process, and I do thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Just to kind of give you a brief little history of me, this will be my third confirmation process. I've served on the Human Rights Commission now for a little over 7 years, and been appointed and confirmed by the legislature three different times. My prior background is police and law enforcement. I was a chief of police also, both here in Whittier and other places. I'm currently the mayor for the city of Whittier, and I also work for the Alaska Railroad Corporation. I feel like the Human Rights Commission is a very important organization for the state of Alaska to help try to eliminate discrimination in our workplace. And I'd like to continue with that process if I could.
Okay, thank you. I would ask, and thank you for your long service, what do you feel is your unique contribution to the commission that makes you consider yourself as a valuable member?
Well, all my adult life, Madam Chair, I served as a law enforcement officer, always trying to uphold the rights of individuals, and so this was just a perfect fit for me to try to help serve the citizens of Alaska to try to help eliminate discrimination in the workplace. I was really taken back and surprised at the amount of discrimination in the workplace that does take place, and this has opened my eyes to that, and it is a serious problem, not only of course here in Alaska, but across the U.S. as well. And I believe that we have a good staff with the commission to investigate these offenses, and I just like to be a part of the process of taking on the challenge of trying to eliminate and educate both the workplace and the citizens of Alaska in this problem.
Okay, thank you. And just adding to that, what are your objectives? Just give us a couple for the next term on the commission, should this confirmation hearing go through.
Yes, ma'am. sure as many constituents have probably noted, you know, the length of time from a case to be reported to the resolution of the case is always a concern, both to the complainant and to the employer, as well as many elected officials. And it's my goal to try to work with the legislature and the governor's office and staff to see if we can't figure out more efficient ways to help reduce the time that it takes to investigate some of these cases. As many of you know, not to insult anyone's intelligence, but as many of you know, these cases are very, very similar to civil cases that sometimes takes years to investigate and go through an appeal process. And we have several systems in place in our state government that these cases sometimes have to go through to reach a resolution. And hopefully this next year or two, maybe we can all come together and figure out a more efficient way to resolve these cases. And that's my goal.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there other questions from my colleagues? Do you have any questions? Okay, seeing none. Then I'll open it up to public testimony. Thank you, Mr. Lunchford. Please stay online in case there's some more questions. Is there anyone else online, Jen? Okay. So now we have heard the public testimony, so I'll go ahead and close since there's no one coming forward. And let's turn it to my committee members. Yes, Senator French.
For a motion, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I would move that Lester Lunsford's name be forwarded from this committee onto the full body for confirmation.
Do I hear any objections to forward Mr. Lunchford's name? Seeing none, hearing none, the name is forward. We will take a brief at ease here. Go ahead and pass Mr. Lunsford's name out. This is not a guarantee that we're going to be voting on the floor for or against. We're just passing him out of this hearing committee. Okay, next we have Lawrence Hartig. We'll move his name forward as the Lieutenant Governor's successor. Mr. Hartig, would you like to make an opening statement? Please come forward and state your name for the record and affiliation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senators, I appreciate being here at the hearing, you scheduling this and having me here today. I'm Larry Hartig. I'm the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. I've served in that capacity since February 2007. I'll just give you a brief history that may be pertinent to my current position and, you know, not a new position, but a tentative assignment. I came to Alaska in 1967 with my family from Wyoming, my parents and two brothers. We came up here right before the oil boom. And my father was as attorney working with the Attorney General's office, was hired by Governor Hickel at that time to run the land division or the natural resource section of the Department of Law. I grew up pretty much in Anchorage, went outside to college, came back in the mid-70s, and about that time was when the construction was getting going on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and I worked there at Alyeska Pipeline in their land legal department doing land and title work for several years during summers in college and after college. And then after college, managed a company down in Kenai for about a year and a half, and then after that decided to go to law school. I went to Lewis and Clark Law School in Portland, Oregon. While I was going to night school, while I was there, I worked for Safeco Title Insurance Company, originally as a regional or as a high liability trust officer for Multnomah County, the city of Portland, and then later as regional underwriter for the state operations for the company in charge of auditing, underwriting, and training. After graduating from law school, I came back to the state. and went to work at my father's old law firm. He had passed away in an accident by then, but I went with his old firm and practiced there for 23 years. And then I left private practice again in February 2007 to go to work for the state of Alaska. And frankly, I've enjoyed my public service very, very much. Enjoy working with the legislature, the people of Alaska. And I knew coming into this position what I would like best, because I learned this from my private practice, what I like best, and that's working with people all around the state on a real variety of issues. And I'll say that this position as Commissioner DEC exceeded all my expectations about the pleasure of working with all different communities and people around the state. In terms of the Lieutenant Governor successor designee position, it's not something I ever planned to do, frankly. I don't want to do. But I realized the importance of planning ahead as something that we do at DEC, you know, being a responder to emergency situations almost every day around the state, really understand the value of having a plan in place in case something does happen. In this case, where the Lieutenant Governor can't continue to fulfill his duties and somebody needs to step in. And looking forward to what would be presented should that occasion arise, assuming that I get successfully through the confirmation process and something happened with the Lieutenant Governor couldn't continue to serve. Of course, the big thing right out there now is the primary election in August and the general in November. So I would see that the most important thing for me to do would be to understand, you know, everything that needs to happen between now and then. And so if I had to step in and take over those duties, I'd be prepared to do it. And I would look at that being my primary function is to just make sure the election comes off as it should, a fair and election with access to everybody, you know, that wants to vote, to get to vote, and, you know, people have confidence in that election. And my job would be done, and my successor would be in there. So with that, that's my opening comments, Chair, and open for any questions.
I would just ask, is it reasonable to consider that you have a good working relationship right now with Governor Parnell and Lieutenant Governor Craig Campbell?
That's correct. In fact, when Governor Parnell asked me whether I, you know, would be willing to be the designee, he told me that he's known me for, gosh, probably 25 years. In fact, he and Senator Murkowski were actually associates of my old law firm together years ago. So I've known him for many years. We played softball and other things together. So he knows me real well, but he said that that one, he knows me, and the other thing he knows is that if there was an emergency, something really bad happened, that I'm the kind of person that, you know, he could count on to step in and, you know, deal with an emergency.
And then the other question I was going to ask is, what have you done so far to prepare? But you've already answered that in your opening comments. So I would turn now to my colleagues. Do you have anything? Okay, Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, you and I had a conversation about a month ago, a little over a month ago, about the events and circumstances surrounding Gershon Cohen's appointment and then removal from a science advisory panel. Would you mind giving us a little bit of a narrative, or at least your perspective on what happened there?
Yeah, Senator French, thank you for the question. The science advisory panel was formed under House Bill 134 that passed, I think, unanimously last year in both bodies. And so I worked quite a bit with both bodies on that, testifying and talking with the sponsor about language and the people that were offering amendments about language. So I felt that I had a pretty good working familiarity with the bill, and I thought, you know, what the intent was. And now I have to say I didn't fully understand maybe everybody's intent in passing the bill. But it has five key components to it, and it all relates to the wastewater discharge permits that are issued to large cruise ship vessels that operate in Alaska. One of the elements, first key element as I understand it, is the legislature expressing its intent that the cruise ships eventually meet state water quality standards at the point they discharge. In other words, as soon as the wastewater comes out of the ship, it meets drinking water quality, meets all our state standards before it mixes with the receiving water. But also recognized in legislation is that they're not at that point at this time, and we don't know exactly when they'll be at that point, you know, what technology can achieve that. So in an interim period, DEC has the authority to authorize a mixing zone, you know, allow some dilution before they're measured against state water quality standards. And that's common practice around the state with other wastewater discharges. It's not unique. But before DEC is authorized, is allowed to authorize a mixing zone, we have to reach a conclusion that the discharger is using that technology that is the most effective at reducing pollution that is also economically feasible. And so that's the standard we have to measure before we get them against, before we can authorize any kind of relaxation in the discharge limits. It was also recognized that the state of the knowledge isn't perfect, as in terms of what can be achieved now and perhaps going forward. And so a science advisory panel was formed, DEC was directed to form a science advisory panel consisting, I believe it's 11 members, if I remember right, four which are to come from specific sectors or industries, including non-governmental organizations, cruise ship industry, fishing, and local communities. And so we started a nomination process, and I'll explain that in a minute. The other components is that this science advisory panel is supposed then to prepare several reports to the legislature and to DEC about what's achievable and what's not achievable. There's a time frame for that, and after 6 years, the panel goes away, DEC's authority to authorize mixing zones goes away, and the legislature revisits whether to allow DEC to continue having authority to authorize mixing zones, or the company's going to have to meet this water quality standard in a pipe at that time. The fifth element is DEC has the authority, which I was grateful that the legislature gave us, to ask questions of and require responses from industry as to particular questions so we could track what they're doing and not doing in terms of advancements towards in technology. So anyway, going back to the panel for a minute, I looked at the panel as an extremely serious endeavor because it's 6 years and we go off a cliff. 6 years from now, cruise ships have to meet, which is the toughest standard I'm aware of in the world, certainly tougher than the federal government standards, tougher than any other state. And they have to achieve that within 6 years. And it's not, right now, we don't know what that standard is, because until the panel does its job, informs the legislature and DEC, and you know we work through these technology questions, and then they have to then design, engineer, retrofit ships and all this, and then we have to rewrite permits and go through a public process. All that has to happen within 6 years, and these companies are going to be anxious, communities are going to be anxious, everybody's going to be anxious of what's going to happen in 6 years. So the only thing that they can do is look at the interim permits and the limits that are in there from DEC and look at the work of the panel to try to, you know, foresee, you know, what's coming in 6 years and make their plans accordingly. So it's a heavy responsibility I see on this panel. And there's two competing factors here, and I saw in pointing people to the panel. One is trying to satisfy the various interest groups, you know, and particularly on as to those seats from which their members come, and so that they believe it's a good process and feel like we have a good panel and it's operated fairly and openly with the public. The other is that they do the best science, because we are relying on them. It'll be very important to particularly the Southeast economy and jobs that we get it right, very important to the environment that we get it right. So I took the job of appointing these people very seriously, and one of the nominees, the only nominee we got from the NGO sector was Dr. Gershon Cohen, who I've known for a number of years and worked, I think, going back to 15, 20 years, perhaps, ever since I know he's been in Alaska on various issues. And we have, I think, a pretty good working relationship. We worked fine, you know, during HB 134, and actually had the support both of industry and NGOs end of the day. And had a serious discussion with him about concerns that could he be impartial on a science panel, or would he continue to be an advocate, because he was one of the co-sponsors of the 2006 Citizens Initiative, which created this tight requirement. And in the end of the day, I other people share this too. I know that I just didn't feel like it could be impartial on a science panel, and I knew it was controversial, and it was even more controversial than I can imagine when I said, no, you're not going to be on the seat. But where I was really convinced it was the right move, even though I agree that it wasn't a pleasant move for anybody, was when I was talking with him for over an hour, and he said to me, you know, Larry, he says, I think it's just plain stupid that these ships don't already have, some of these systems in place, you know, on their vessels now. And as a system where he was talking about that has been bench tested, meaning it's tried in a lab, but it hasn't ever been tried in practice, even scaled up, on some kind of beta testing. And I thought, well, you can't go into a panel and tell other people you're stupid if you don't agree with me, you know, the position. And I thought, too, I mean, I look at it right now in terms of something I'm very familiar with and care about is on climate change. I look at the beating that the East Anglia people are taking at the university, where scientists kind of, in my mind, kind of cross the line in terms of advocacy versus science and how that's really crippled that effort in my mind. So I it's not a fun decision to say, no, Gershon, it's not you. I think, though, that working through it, we have somebody now that's appointed that I think will do a good job. She's vetted herself, I believe, with the environmental groups, has talked with Gershon and plans to get his input. I assured him, Gershon, that he will make every effort to make sure that he gets all the information for all the meetings. Certainly can come to the meeting and participate as a member of the public and provide input. All the meetings will be open to the public. But at the end of the day, people will disagree with me, and I appreciate that, and I respect it. And it wasn't a perfect decision, I agree, and not one I enjoyed making.
Thank you for that explanation. Do you have a follow-up,
Senator? Just a couple
Senator
follow-ups. You appointed Mr. Cohen to the panel in mid-December of 2009, is that right?
DEC did wasn't handling the appointments directly myself. I mean, it was a group that was working on it in the program people, and they went out and did a solicitation of names and then selected names. And I knew that he was on there and that he was the only candidate from the NGO. So I have to admit, I assumed he was going to be appointed since there wasn't any other NGO candidate.
Follow up, Senator Finch.
Just to make sure I understand, you were aware that he had been nominated and you were aware of who it was before he was appointed, correct?
I was aware that he was the only candidate from the NGOs the last time I saw the list, which was shortly before the appointments, but I didn't sit there and say him, her, and that on the appointments. Maybe I should have in retrospect and vetted names, but I didn't. But I assumed that he was going to be appointed well before he was appointed, yes.
And you didn't do anything to stop the appointment ahead of time?
No.
Okay. And then a month later you removed him?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. That's all the questions I have.
Are there any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hardick, for coming before us today. And certainly you and I have worked together closely on some DEC matters, and so I know your capabilities in that area, and you've done a fine job. I'm more interested, though, if you become the lieutenant governor, if something happens to our current governor or lieutenant governor, or, you know, whatever happened last time happens again. I don't know if we can go through that again. but we had a bill before us pertaining to electronic voting for utility companies. That was something that they wanted. Is that something that you've thought much about? Can we do that statewide at our elections? And is that something that you would support, or have you had a chance to think about it?
Senator Meyer, I'm not familiar with that. And I think, you know, the practical answer is I don't see that happening during the short tenure I would have as lieutenant governor. Something should happen, because I see it as something that would probably not be in place for August or November, and by then, you know, my successor would be in. I see this would be a very short-term assignment if it ever happened.
Okay.
But so if there was a need to look at it, I certainly would look at it. And I think I would assume that it would take a careful look at what the federal requirements are in terms of voting and voting access. And any question that would come up regarding election or election practices, I would be really careful to consult the Attorney General's office on any requirements. I'd be very careful to consult the Director of Elections and anybody else with expertise in the area and proceed cautiously.
Follow up, Senator French.
Meyer.
Oh, okay. Yes. Good morning.
Sorry. It takes a while for the coffee to kick in for me as well. I'm just trying to think here. How long is this appointment in effect? So, in other words, if we have the elections, let's say, in November, and then the lieutenant governor at that time, and let's say you're still your current position, lieutenant governor at that time decides to resign in January, could you potentially then be the lieutenant governor for up to 2 years, or how would this work?
I don't believe so. I believe what would happen, and I'd have to check with the Attorney General's office to be sure of this, but I believe what would happen is that with the governor at that time would have to designate his or her successor, the lieutenant governor's successor, and go through another confirmation process, I assume. I believe this appointment just through this four-year term.
Okay, so if I may,
yes.
Chair, I'm just so I understand.
Senator Meyer.
This, in your mind and ours, is only for the time period between now and next November?
I believe that's correct, but I'd have to confirm it because I haven't researched that. That's been my assumption.
Okay. And then,
follow up.
Yes, if I may, Madam Chair. Do you currently live in Anchorage or Juneau?
I'm in Anchorage.
In Anchorage, okay. Okay. Yeah, Madam Chair, as far as I know, I don't think there's any requirement for the lieutenant governor to live in Juneau, so.
Are there any questions? Any further questions? Okay, I think we'll go ahead and have public testimony now. I don't see anybody that has signed up. Is there anyone in the room that would like to give any testimony? Okay, would you like to open up for more discussion as far as committee members here at the table?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair. I'll just say, I was going to say it in the process of the motion, but I'll just let Commissioner know that I'm not going to be supporting him for this position. It's not a major position. I think it's unlikely he'll have to succeed to the lieutenant governor's job. On the other hand, we know, if we know nothing from the last 4 years in Alaskan politics, we know that it's hard to predict the future. I like the commissioner. We've worked out our differences before on major bills like the primacy bill that I disagreed with and your office supported, and we were able to work that out. But I was profoundly disturbed by the handling of the Gershon Cohen case. He was appointed by the commissioner, by the commissioner's office. He was removed a month later before the science advisory panel had ever even met. The science advisory panel is 11 members, and Dr. Cohen was going to be one of them. And I was just deeply unhappy with the way that was handled. And it looked, for all intents and purposes, that the cruise ship industry had sort of swooped in and exercised some influence in the commissioner's office. I don't know whether that's true or not, but it certainly looked that way. So
okay.
I just wanted to put that on the record. Thank you.
Okay. And I misspoke. I needed to close public testimony, and I certainly can defer to you again.
Speech is over.
Yeah,
yeah, thank you.
Would you like to say anything, Senator Kukesh?
I guess I should. I recognize that Gershon was in my district and is one of my constituents, but I appreciate the process you went through. I'm sure it was very hard. I also would like to make, for the record, known that I've known this gentleman for many, many years, and my association goes back to my village corporation days when I was young and foolish. But I appreciate, and I want you to know that I personally think that you've done a good job in all of the time that I've known you, and I appreciate your honesty and your effort, and I would be very comfortable if you were lieutenant governor of the state. And it's my intention, of course, right now to vote for you, your name to go forward.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. So what is the will of the committee? Do I have any objections to forwarding the name of Lawrence Hardig from committee?
Madam Chair, do you want a motion to that effect?
Yes, please.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move that we, the State Affairs Committee, forward Mr. Hardik's name on to the full body.
Okay. Do we hear any objection? Seeing none. And again, I will state that this does not guarantee that the name will go, you know, that you're automatically going to be put in this position. It will be voted on the floor, the full bodies, both bodies present. So, okay. We'll gavel out. Thank you. The confirmation of Adjunct General Thomas Kakus as the Commissioner of Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Would you like to make an opening statement, General?
Good morning. Yes, I would.
State your name, please, and affiliate.
Thomas Kakus, K-A-T-K-U-S, and currently serving as Commissioner for Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and the Adjutant General for the State of Alaska. As an opening statement, what I'd like to do is kind of, I've been trying to take it into how do I present myself. And first of all, I have to say I'm extremely honored and just thrilled to be sitting here, still being able to serve in uniform and have the honor to at least have your consideration for this unbelievable appointment. For a member who has worked up through the ranks and never in my wildest dreams would have thought I'd be sitting here before this committee with this type of a responsibility as an opportunity is pretty awesome. I've had a great career both in civilian and the military opportunities that I've had. And like I said, I sit here before you today just in awe of being able to go through the confirmation process with you. So with that, I'm open for any of your questions.
Okay, questions from colleagues. Senator French.
Sure, thanks, Madam Chair. General Kakus, you've had a long career in Alaska, and I won't take you through it in great detail, but I would ask, I noticed in November 1993, you were in Bethel with as the Communications Electronics Officer, and then in May of 1994, you were the Infantry Company Commander in Quinnahock. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your years in the YK Delta and what you bring to the job from that experience.
Overall, that was a great opportunity where I was approached primarily a lot of my assignments. I had moved from an airborne detachment where I first joined the National Guard, which is centrally located in Anchorage. That gave me a lot of opportunity, though, because it was a jumping unit. And we went out around the state finding different places to parachute in overnight, and it was one of the best camping trip opportunities there were. And it gave a little bit of an insight to just how rural areas functioned a little bit. As I then went to the 5th Battalion out at Jewel Lake Armory, again, it's an Anchorage-based organization with tracked vehicles, and tracked armored vehicles in Muskeg country were great in the wintertime, but not so well in the summertime. Got an appreciation for the type of land and the type of climate that Alaska, again, born and raised here, but not the opportunity to travel very much. So when I had the opportunity to get an assignment out in Bethel and start to meet a lot of the folks that I knew that had traveled into Anchorage, and also in my law enforcement career, I was meeting numerous people from the village areas on the streets of Anchorage and realizing that there's different perceptions and different attitudes of that small snippet of exposure in Anchorage compared to the rural areas. So again, I got out to a rural area with the direction to learn everything I can from the commanders out there, provide them interaction and perspective from a rural or from an urban officer and commander, but to try to try to work myself to a position where I understood what it takes to lead a rural area. And working out there with then Major Johnny Yvonne and learning simple things. And this is interesting. I know I'm probably taking a long time, but a little flashback here. What you didn't understand was how do you get folks to be properly prepared to go out into the field? And Johnny Yvonne, the major, he would have his men stand out there. It was an infantry unit, so it was all male. And they'd stand out at 20 below for 20 minutes or 30 minutes in formation. And I, Johnny, why are you wasting time? It was very obvious in those 20 minutes, the guys that didn't have their gloves, the guys that weren't properly prepared would start to fidget around and you would avoid any type of issues out there later in the drill weekend. So I started paying real close attention to Johnny Yvonne, kind of a mentor. And they would take me and show me kind of how to not survive, but how to make life a little easier in the rural area. So taking all of that experience, developing relationships, and really getting to know those folks, it has paid great dividends, too. As I've moved here recently as the Adjutant General in building or setting forth the new location for the new Bethel Armory, We had to move that from an area that was not very well suited. It was in the middle of a swamp. It was fairly deep water, and we were still about 4 feet below the water level. But interacting with the community and moving that to a better site all within 8 months was understanding the relationship and developing and knowing those people out there and how to deal, as opposed to, again, an urban-centric mindset and dealing with the rural folks. So like I said, it doesn't seem like much, but as a young captain out there, it is incredibly important to get to know those little lessons. And I can just go on for days on all the different interactions that I've had and developing the relationships out there.
Just pause a second, because I think Senator Meyer, did you want to?
Thank you. I can just see the enthusiasm in your eyes when you talk about the region, and I appreciate that.
You got me flashing back there. That was totally unexpected in that area.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, yes, just for the record, I need to let folks know that I know General Cactus very well, and my wife actually works for him as a special assistant. And as such, I think the normal procedure would be to participate at the committee level, and then once it gets to the floor, then I'll declare conflict of interest and ask to be excused.
Okay.
But I wanted that clear for the record.
Okay, and your comments have been noted for the record.
Thank you.
Okay, is there anyone else that has any questions? Okay. We're going to go, then I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony, and I have off-net Mike Coons from Fort Richardson Military and Veterans Affairs. Mike, are you online? Would you state your name, please? Oh, I'm sorry, you're here in person. Please come forward and state your name for the record and affiliation.
Yes, ma'am. I'm Major Michael Coons. I'm the executive officer for the 1st Battalion, Central Command, 49th Readiness Brigade, Alaska State Defense Force, and I thank you for this opportunity. I really wasn't kind of planning on doing this, but I got just a few, I think I got about 3 minutes, so I'll try and keep this short.
That's correct.
When people see government, they think overspending, no bang for the buck. However, the State Defense Force has given a product, public safety, for a very small price, far less than any other agency could. How is this possible? First off, we volunteer without pay to join. Then we train 1 weekend per month without pay. All equipment, uniforms, backpacks, firearms, ammo, sleeping bags, all those items needed to deploy on a moment's notice, we pay for. The only cost that the state has is when we deploy to protect our state. Since I've been in, we've had deployments to the Yukon River Bridge immediately after 9/11, then Wintertown in 2003, Hoover Bay, Willow Flood, and Valdez Flood in 2008. Cost $250 to $280 per day per person. So since 2008, we've not been deployed. So what do we do between call-ups? Train. How much does that cost the state of the people of the state of Alaska? Zero. What is the cost of the average soldier of the last State Defense Force as volunteers? $4,000. General Cactus has revised our mission. While we were the lead on small disasters, the National Guard will now take that role for both large and small. We are now the Strategic Reserve. After being briefed by him, I understand his concept. His emphasis is that of the cadre mission. In the event of a major disaster, we train the unorganized militia and then respond to a disaster for whatever task which will rebuild affected communities. I have expressed him my concern about the time frame it takes for the National Guard to respond. He assures me that the National Guard can be boots on the ground in hours. Under existing laws, the National Guard can call up people rapidly upon a need from the governor. However, the equipment that is to go with the people, the transportation aspects, weapons, communications, is equipment bought by the federal government, and the National Guard Bureau, and the president have to approve to use. This is the thing that kind of slow. This is one thing that can slow the process down. The question is then: is how can we, the militia, the National Guard, and the Alaska State Defense Force, respond rapidly, effectively, both cost and goal, to the needs of affected communities during small disasters and large disasters? Also, who is the most cost-effective? After having a 2.5-hour conversation with the general a few weeks ago, going over a lot of these issues, I believe that the Alaska State Defense Force, under General Cactus's guidance, has and can continue to give the people of Alaska a huge bang for the buck with the proper support from you, General, and the Governor. And I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Coon. Is there anyone else?
It's COONS.
Okay. Is there anyone else that has testimony they want to come forward with? Seeing there's no one online. Okay, seeing that, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. What is the will of this committee? And do I hear objections to move this name forward, Thomas Kakis?
Madam Chair, I'd be pleased to move that Brigadier General Thomas Kakis' name be forwarded out of this committee onto the full body for confirmation, with the normal disclaimer that such a motion does not imply any promise to vote for or against the general in a full session.
Thank you. Is there any objection? Seeing them, your name is moved forward.
Madam Chair, adjourned. Thank you so much.